episode of A Week Late is brought to you by FenEntertainment.com, offering the very best in free independent music from the great sunny state of Florida and beyond. Download underground hip-hop, rock, industrial, drum and bass, dubstep, ska, drumstep, jungle, and much, much more. From single tracks to full sets, albums, and remixes, all for free. Plus the latest videos that get you up to speed on all the current tech, art, music, video games, TV, movies, pop culture, and even anime. No ads, no pop-ups, no flashy distraction banners, and it's absolutely free. Never charge for anything. For all this and more information, go to www.fenentertainment.com.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of A Week Late Podcast. My name is Darren, a.k.a. Analysis 489. That's the word analysis and the numbers 489. Somebody the other day asked me, why the a.k.a.? Well, here's why. If anybody cares enough, and I've mentioned this on previous episodes before, that is my personal Twitter handle. That is my gamer tag for Xbox 360. Similar on the Wii, but I don't think they have it to where you can friend request with usernames just yet. Also, the Wii U is coming out soon, so I don't know what features they have to find each other on gamer tags, but that's also where you're where you can find me on Facebook. And also, funny enough, MySpace, but they're revamping right now, so I don't think you can catch me on there. Anyway, for the first time listeners, this is a show where I review movies, That's pretty much it. I also talk about video games, I also talk about TV shows. And I love documentaries. There are three different kinds of the A Week Late podcast that people have been downloading. The regular episodes, movies that are still in theaters, those get episode numbers. Movies that are no longer in theaters, I review if I haven't seen them or if I have seen them. The retro episodes is what those are called. And for the ones that fall sort of in between, which is what this week's show happens to do, I call those bonus episodes. Here's why. Documentaries don't always make it to the theater, so it's not really fair to not give it its own episode number just because it never made it to the theater. This particular documentary I'm going to be watching for today's show is called Hito Dreams of Sushi. There's a little bit of backstory about how I came to know about this documentary, which I will talk about here in a second. For the listeners that have previously downloaded or streamed a world-renowned episode of A Week Late Podcast, they know that the rating system for the three different kinds of podcasts are also different. Retro and bonus episode have a rating of 0 to 5 stars, normally because the services in which you procure these movies usually have the same kind of rating. It's just easier for me to rate it that way. The ones that I rate in a theater usually have a rating from 0 to 11D. Made up a word to describe what is the absolute perfect best movie. Usually given at the end of the show, at the second portion of the show. only because that's when you feel, I believe that's when you feel most passionate about the movie you just watched, when things are fresh. It doesn't make much sense to rate a movie a couple days after I've seen it because I don't feel as strongly about it, I feel. Does this make for some rating mistakes? Do I go back and say, you know, maybe that movie didn't deserve, in hindsight, that movie didn't deserve the high rating or the low rating I gave it? Yeah, maybe. But at that time, the rating to me was fair. I don't know too much about, my Japanese is rusty. The reason I pronounced the title the way I did, most people would say Hero Dreams of Sushi. I've seen enough episodes of Heroes in which there is a character from Japan whose name is also Hero. And if I'm not mistaken, it's spelled the same. And I take, I wouldn't call it pride, but I like to pronounce people's names the way they're meant to be pronounced. So in this particular movie, documentary, I'm watching this movie through Netflix on the new Xbox 360 dashboard. It was released yesterday, which was Tuesday, October 23rd. I usually don't put a date on podcasts, but I think it's kind of important because it goes along the lines of what I do, and that's review stuff. And since I'm a huge tech kind of guy, it matters to me when things work, how they're supposed to, because we're consumers and that's what we pay for. So sometimes I also rate technology at the same time I'm rating a movie because they kind of go hand in hand. Most movies these days are being watched online. I skipped the whole Blu-ray thing and went from DVD straight to straight to streaming online, and have amassed quite a bit of a collection on storage devices and services like Amazon, which you could probably also find this movie on. Maybe it's on YouTube. I don't know. It's just easier for me to watch it through my Xbox on the big screen. With Netflix, might as well because I pay for it. So, on Netflix, this movie was released in 2011. It is rated PG, and it is 82 minutes long. That, for those people that are bad at math, that's an hour and 22 minutes if I'm not bad at math. The description reads as follows. This documentary profiles sushi chef Hiro Ono, an 85-year-old master whose 10-seat, $300-a-plate restaurant is legendary among Tokyo foodies. The cast is the star, Hiro Ono, and I guess it's his brother or father, Yoshikazu Ono. The genre is listed as documentaries, biographical documentaries, and under social and cultural documentaries. The only thing that Netflix has to say about it is that this movie is visionary, and users gave it a 4.5-star rating, which is probably the closest you can get to perfect on here. There is no in between 4.5 and 5, even though I will throw ratings out like that. The Netflix ratings and I believe the Hulu ratings are about the same. There's no in between. So that being said, I learned about this movie watching one of my favorite podcasts. Actually, they don't even call it a podcast. It's pretty much an online TV show. If you've heard this podcast before, you've heard me talk about a company called Revision 3. That company was created by the result of a company called a network, a TV network called Tech TV. They were based out in San Francisco a few years back. It's probably been 10 plus years now. And it was just good to see some of the fallout from that go from negative to positive. Some of the people that broke off from that network created their own network, mainly for online webcasts, TV shows online, video podcasts, whatever you want to call them. They made a network of it called Revision 3, had big shows on it like Dig Nation. I believe Epic Mealtime was at one point on Revision 3. Don't quote me on that. It might still be, actually. countless other ones. Totally Rad Show, which brings me to how I got to know of this documentary. First of all, I'm a huge fan of documentaries. I've done a couple already, so if you're a big fan of documentaries, I've done a couple of reviews for a lot of really good ones. This is why this episode is not going to be a retro episode. This is too new of a movie to consider it no longer in theaters, even though to my knowledge, it was never in theaters. I believe it went straight to Netflix. They're starting to do that a lot, these online streaming companies, the way technology is going. They have this section on the Totally Rad Show about, you know, recommendations. They themselves didn't put up a review for this movie, but it came highly recommended. and I'm a sucker for documentaries, especially if they're well shot. I pay attention to things like, lighting and soundtrack and stuff like that. So that's what I base my reviews on. And so if you haven't yet seen it, if you're interested, plus I'm also huge into food. I just love eating. There's no joke there. I'm kind of a fat guy and I like to eat. So some of my friends don't call me fat, but that's whatever. So it combines two of my favorite things, documentaries and food, and I love sushi. So I'm eager to see, first of all, these really, really smart, I don't know if having a 10-seat restaurant is a great way to create, a smart way to create supply and demand, or if it's just a cultural thing where that's all the room he has in his building that he's acquired. I don't know how that works, so I'm really anxious to see how that goes down. So if you're interested, go check it out. This is where I take a break. I play some intermission music, and you can pause it here and go check it out and come back and listen to the second portion in which I'll be giving my rating and possibly talking about other things like Xbox and upcoming video games, which I probably will talk about. I took kind of a breather last week, not so much, it was just scheduling problems, and there really aren't too many movies in the theaters right now that I'd want to go watch anyway. There is one I want to go see, but that's the good thing about having a show called A Week Late, is that when you're late, it's still on time, so good on me for doing that. Yeah, so go check it out, and I'll be back for part two of a weekly podcast bonus episode for Hito Dreams of Sushi. Thanks. Cheers. Welcome back, everybody, for the second portion of Week Late Podcast, bonus episode. I just finished watching Hito Dreams of Sushi, the documentary. I would have to say, first off, there's really no spoilers, I guess, in a documentary for the most part, but I'm going to try to rate it and then talk about it, so that just in case, because it does sort of play out like a regular movie script. There's a lot of drama in every shot. The music is very well done. I don't think I got to say anything about the director. For some reason, it's not listed in the credits on Netflix, but his name is David Gelb, I believe it's pronounced, and he did an amazing job directing this movie. I believe it won some awards at some independent film festivals. It's as far as the rating goes, if you're squeamish, first off, I'm not too sure why it was rated PG, because minus the thing I'm about to say is that if you're squeamish and you don't like the process of gutting fish, maybe the gross out factor is a little up there for some people. It didn't bother me at all. But besides that, I really would recommend. It could be at times boring to some people that aren't used to watching slow-paced documentaries. There were times where this movie did pick up a little bit in pace, if you can believe that. The music did a really good job of capturing what was going on screen. It always matched. It's almost as if the music was written specifically for this film. I wouldn't doubt it, but I don't think so. Only because I was familiar with some of the more classical music that they played. All of the music in this documentary, I would describe as symphonic. There are, you know, famous concertos and stuff like that in this movie, none of which I can name. I just know them by hearing them. Minus some minor issues in editing, and I'm by no means an expert on filmmaking, but I've seen enough documentaries to know when there's sort of a bad edit, and I don't know if that the two that I saw in this movie were done on purpose, but I can actually pick them out, and I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but other than that, this movie, this documentary should get, in my opinion, a 5 out of 5 stars. It was very informative. I thought I knew a lot about food as a whole. I know less about sushi as a whole than I do food as a whole, but now I think I know even less. Now I know that I know even less than I thought I did before, even though I still thought I knew a lot about sushi. This guy, Hito Ono, is 85 years old, and even as a master, he says that he's still learning and perfecting and practicing every single day. There was something said in this movie about work ethic that kind of hit close to home for me. This movie, I wasn't going to give it a full 5 stars because it has one of the things I despise most about a documentary, actually any movie really, are movies with subtitles. Since this documentary takes place in Japan following the life of this chef, clearly everything is in Japanese, and it didn't really hit me until I saw the settings on the Netflix thing that was asking me to take off the subtitles. But unless you can speak Japanese fluently, I would suggest that the subtitles stay on. There are a lot of reasons I don't like that. It's because, especially in documentaries, the way they're shot, the way I want to pay attention to it, reading takes away from the actual scene. And if you're spending all your time reading, you can't really appreciate everything in what's going on the screen. So in that sense, I wouldn't mind watching this movie twice just to watch it again, because I would already know what's going on in the speech, roughly, by the way the film was shot and by the timing and everything like that. There are also some really cool quotes that I took away from this movie. One being, somebody had asked the chef how he's able to portray so much flavor in a simple presentation. And I believe his answer was, simplicity leads to purity, I believe he said. And I thought that was cool, like right there at the tip of his tongue to say to somebody that was asking that question. I guess, I'm about to get into what could be considered as spoilers for a documentary, so if you didn't watch the movie and you're interested in watching it, right now would be a good time to stop listening. Because, like I said, the way the documentary was written, or the way it was shot, it sort of had a storyline to it. And if you're one of those people that's into spoilers huge, then I'll give you a second to shut it off. Now that those people are gone, what I had said before about the cast only being listed as 2 people, main character, the main chef, and his oldest son, Yoshikatsu Ono, were featured heavily in this movie, as were several of the apprentices. I really wanted to see and get a better description of what was going on with some of the techniques that they were using while they were preparing the food. But it's not a cooking documentary. It's a movie about a guy that makes sushi, which oddly enough in the movie it is mentioned that there are a lot of misconceptions about sushi because it's so popular now. It's everywhere, gas stations, convenience stores in some cases. But it's been very heavily rotated. And for the people that are squeamish, like I mentioned, there's a scene in this movie that shows them going to a fish market, and it's probably more fish than I've ever seen in my life in one room. And it kind of concerned me for a while, because I started thinking about issues like overfishing and stuff like that, and they do sort of get into that a little bit. The oldest son has probably a good 3 or 4 minutes where he talks about the environment a little bit and the impact that the sushi industry has on the environment as a whole. So I thought that was really interesting, although kind of ironic. I don't want to use the word hypocritical because they are in the business of selling fish, so but he did mention that there are ways that it could be regulated He went into some facts about how tuna grow and how they're being caught and not released at certain ages, sort of like they have regulations here like that for certain fish in the United States. Sport fishing is catch and release, sometimes for that purpose if the fish is too young, or I'm not really that big of a fisherman myself. I have enjoyed a boat trip or two, but stuff like that was really interesting to me. There was also a tidbit where they were talking about the culture. I'm a big fan of Japanese culture. Some of the things I was mentioning, I didn't mind reading the subtitles so much because I did a lot of anime. I watched a lot of anime when I was younger. And believe it or not, if you watch enough Japanese TV, you can start picking up on some words here and there. Some of them are actually just Japanese versions of American words that don't really exist in their language or culture. But unless you're listening for them, you really can't catch them. He had a son, another son, that got his own restaurant. They were talking about the differences between, actually I contrasted in my own head while I was watching, the differences between Western culture and Japanese culture. And it's sort of an honor to supersede the status of your father, whereas to some people over here may seem that as kind of an insult that your son or your wife or your daughter makes more money than you. Over there it's considered an honor because that would mean that the parents taught you well enough to be better than them financially and maybe as a person, you know, with your personality and whatnot. He was pushed out at a very young age to go and succeed, and he kind of did the same to his son, his younger son that broke off and did a less expensive version of his father's restaurant, bigger space. But what took me, what kind of stayed with me was the fact that since Hiro Ono is left-handed and a sushi chef, his middle son or youngest son, I can't remember which one, that started the restaurant was right-handed. Therefore, the bar section of his restaurant mirrors exactly the 10-seat bar in his father's restaurant, which I thought was pretty amazing. So it's like a tip of the hat to, you know, his origins. And for anybody that's interested, since he is 85, his 10-seat restaurant is so popular that you have to book a month in advance, and your parties can't be more than 10 people. It's $300 a plate and up, and something he said that was interesting that would kind of be considered sexist, I believe, in the United States is that he serves different portions, larger or smaller portions, depending on gender of the customer. But every customer gets an equal amount, an equal number, not amount, an equal number of sushi. So 20 pieces per person for your visit of the highest quality sushi you can get. While I would think it would be something awesome to put on somebody's bucket list before he kicks the bucket, I would imagine that his son's sushi restaurant is a great alternative, both for price-wise and time-wise. However, if you can make it over to Japan in the first place, good on you. That's an expensive plate of sushi, not only for the plane ticket, you got to take that into consideration, but for the actual plate itself. One thing I'd like to say, you know, about the cinematography of the way that it was shot, I'm kind of I don't know if it's just me, but I notice a lot of classic effects, subtle effects that were done to bring what I thought was a really good interpretation from what was going on in the music to the video. There were like classic lenses, like fisheye lenses that were used, Steadicam I caught the use of, wide angle lenses. I didn't think that stuff was still popular to use in filming, but like I said, I mean, I'm no director, but well, actually, technically, I have videos, but we'll leave that alone. The use of those things, I didn't think was still a popular thing, but he made great use of it, and I really liked it. It was very very good use of space and music and effects, some panning and time lapse and some slow motion. That was just some classic effects that I haven't seen in a long time that were done. I think they were used how, you know, they were meant to be used. There weren't really any of these newfangled techniques happening, although I did see some forced use of blur, but I'm a big fan of that anyway. But yeah, if you're a big fan of documentaries, if you're a fan of food, if you're a fan of sushi, go check this out. I highly recommend it. I did want to get in a little bit of say-so on the Xbox 360 update for all the people that are video game fans out there. Like I mentioned earlier, that has been rolling out in a step-up format from Microsoft for the past few weeks, but was made available as of yesterday, which was Tuesday, October 23rd. I downloaded it on both of my consoles. One of my consoles got stuck on a reboot, and I was really apprehensive to do like a reset on it, because they tell you during the update process not to shut off your console, but they don't tell you what to do if it gets frozen while it's updating. So I was really kind of skeptical about that, but I was able to, luckily the second Xbox that I upgraded, which isn't much of an upgrade, which is my kind of gripe and complaint about it, since it went fine after a few minutes, I realized that the other Xbox had just gotten stuck, so I just rebooted and went through the process again of downloading and updating. After that, I was kind of disappointed already at the home screen to see some differences in the layout. All they really did, if you're going to call something an upgrade, I would imagine there would be some new features, some a new look to everything, but everything pretty much still looks the same, minus the fact that there are more panes or windows for you to click on. There's just more crap in your face now. There is a new music app. The Zune Marketplace went away. It got replaced by Microsoft Music. That's on your main dashboard. Millions of streaming songs, that kind of crap. I don't think I'm ever going to use that because I don't see myself purchasing music that way. Besides that, I'm kind of disappointed in the quick play feature. It has been replaced by pins, much of what you would see on Windows Vista and above operating systems on Microsoft machines. You can pin something to the taskbar. You can pin something to the menu bar to make it more accessible. I don't mind you renaming it, but to not be able to jump from one app from inside of the Netflix app to inside the Hulu app by simply using the old quick play feature. It has since been taken away. I don't know if it's still there and I just can't find it and it's called something else, but so far you have to go back into the main Xbox home screen to switch out apps, and I think it's a step back and not a step forward, What they did finally add was the Internet Explorer app. I've downloaded it. I haven't yet used it. This is something that I've always questioned. You're Microsoft, you're an online company, your consumers are online, and your Xbox has a Bing search, but it has no browser. It now has a browser, something that the Wii has had since it's been out, although not fully capable with a lot of Flash stuff. That stuff is taken care of by the apps themselves. You can't run Hulu in the web browser on the Wii, but you can run Hulu in the Hulu app on the Wii, so you kind of get around it by that. I was going to talk about the Wii U. I'm not going to do that, only because it just doesn't seem to fit in this particular episode. For the most part, you don't have a choice. You have to download the dashboard. There are certain apps that you can and can't pin to your main screen, I guess you would say, after you log in. If you guys have any tips for me, I have yet to find out how I can change the look, not the skin, but the look, the layout of the dashboard. I just don't see that much of an improvement overall to this huge ordeal. They've been making a big deal out of it. I don't really get it. I might have a little bit more to say after I can browse on the internet on the Xbox, but if I have a computer a few feet away, it doesn't make sense to me, and why it just hasn't been more readily available. Earlier, it may have been a big deal, but now it's like, who cares? I downloaded it anyway just so I can be a little bit more up to speed, but I don't really care to surf the internet on my Xbox. I might figure out a reason why I might be able to do that later, but right now I can't think of one. If you can think of one, my gamertag on Xbox is analysis, the number's 489, so send me a text on there or leave me a voice note and whatnot. I'd have to accept your friendship first, so when you do send me a friend request, I got a couple of friend requests before. I'm not sure if they were from the podcast. I hope they are, but if you're listening, leave me a little note. Let me know that you are from there, otherwise you're just a random person that I will not friend in order for us to talk. So you can hit me up that way too, at analysis489 on Twitter, facebook.com/analysis489. You can go to, what else am I on? I don't know. I guess that's it. Thank you guys for listening to A Week Late. I guess if you are a new listener, you can hit me up on Twitter for the show page, is at A Week Late on Twitter, facebook.com/A Week Late Podcast. We also have a music blog, I'm sure you'll hear in the little snippets I have at the beginning and end of each episode, fanentertainment.com. Doing some site upgrades to those that'll be coming out pretty soon. That to reach that on Twitter is at Fen Promos, F-E-N, Frank Echo November for you military phonetic alphabet people out there. Thanks for listening. You can catch us on iTunes as well. Do a search for A Week Late Podcast. We are under comedy section. Please subscribe and rate. That helps out a lot, I've heard. So if you like this and others, there are plenty more, 50-plus episodes available now for free. You never have to pay for anything. It's something I do for you guys because I can. And feedback is very welcome. If you go to any one of those places and hit me up, chances are I will actually hit you back. So, that being said, thanks for listening, And until next time, I will see you a week ago. Cheers. This episode of Weekly is brought to you by FenEntertainment.com, offering the very best in free independent music from the great sunny state of Florida and beyond. Download underground hip-hop, rock, industrial, drum and bass, dubstep, ska, drumstep, jungle, and much, much more. From single tracks to full sets, albums, and remixes, all for free. Plus the latest videos that get you up to speed on all the current tech, art, music, video games, TV, movies, pop culture, and even anime. No ads, no pop-ups, no flashy distraction banners, and it's absolutely free. Never a charge for anything. For all of this and for more information, go to www.fenentertainment.com.